This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Place to Be Nation, you are back inside the war zone, the wrestling war zone. This is JT with the Wrestling War Zone podcast, a Monday Night Wars retrospective, episode number 8. And joining me, as always, is my co-host on the show, that is Chadwick Campbell. Chad, how are you?
I'm doing good. Into another week. We have the house mostly free.
Yeah.
Tonight on both ends.
Do you have another escapade on your end, or what? What's going on?
I didn't know. Jennifer's gone. So.
Oh, okay.
Just a party of one, my friend. No, I do have the baby, my youngest one, the child that shall not be named, according to Brad.
That's right.
Always sticking up for him. But just me and him tonight.
I am alone. My wife had a bachelorette party. She's staying overnight. And then I had mentioned, I think, in a previous episode, I have to help the cowboy move to his new ranch in the morning. And so I guess this is the whole story I can tell. So he had everything lined up, and he had – it's me, Mr. Flanagan, the cowboy, and then his buddy Don. And then he's supposed to have this guy that does karate with to help. And so last night he texts us, and he's like, this guy like bailed on him because he's a Seventh-day Adventist, and he can't do anything on Saturday. That's considered like work. So he bailed. So that was fun. So like, okay, we got Andy. We can strap all the shit to his back. Anyway, we'll be good. And then he texts today, and he's like, U-Haul just called me and canceled my reservation because they can't get any trucks. Like, in a 100-mile radius, there's no truck. So he calls Ryder, he calls Enterprise, he calls Budget. Like, no one has a truck, like a big-box moving truck. So he's going to be out tomorrow. Like, the buyers are like they're moving in, like, right after. So he ends up finding a flatbed truck that's like basically like a fucking farm, like you would do like a hayride in, like like sides. So he's able to get a 16-foot one of those. And then I had to end up getting my dad's pickup truck. So that led to me now having my kids stay over my parents because they can't come with me in the pickup truck. They were going to come moving with me. So it ended up all these extra logistics I had to worry about. But in the end, what it left me is an empty house, and for the first time ever, I'm podcasting in my living room instead of my basement, so I'm excited about that. Unfortunately, though, I can't really take advantage, because I'll be up anyway to early to go help move, but, you know, I'll take what I can get.
Yeah, U-Haul canceled on us, too, the last time we moved. We were able to get a budget truck, but that seems to be an issue with them. I don't know why they can't figure that out.
Right? So what happens? Like, do people just not return the truck? I mean, what is it?
I think it's that situation, or maybe like overbooking a plane. They just figure
people cancel, I guess, or whatever.
Yeah, people just cancel or whatever. I don't know. I don't understand it. But yeah, it was the same story. Like where we lived before was about 35 miles from downtown Atlanta, and the closest truck was like on the other side of Atlanta. So right. It was about, you know, 40 miles away. So I said, forget it. So, yeah, it's just, I mean, anything with moving, it always seems to be a logistical nightmare. There's always something going on. But so he should be in by tomorrow, come hell or high water, though, right?
Hopefully. We'll see. You know, we haven't even gotten to the day yet. Usually something will probably go wrong, at least on that day as well. So I get to make the drive up in the old truck with no, like, you know, connection for my phone and no Sirius that I'm used to. So I'll either go radio or I'll just put my podcast on and hope it's loud enough to hear off my phone. So we'll see.
Nice. Now, speaking of which, so we in Georgia, are y'all hands free in Rhode Island?
We just started like June 1st, I think.
Okay. July 1st is our day.
Yeah.
When we start. But now, this was, I mean, this was just politics at its best. Because, I mean, the hands-free thing, okay, because there's a lot of idiot distracted drivers out there. So, I'm cool with that. But they put in verbiage that said you also could not listen to any internet-related music or apps like Pandora or Spotify are the two they named.
Why? That's weird.
Now what garbage is that?
Right.
So it also got leaked that, like, you know, the radio stations helped funnel some funding and stuff like that, lobbying for this bill. So they threw that in there. But, I mean, just, I mean, what a pile of shit that is. That is just,
yeah, what the fuck?
I mean, garbage.
I mean, are they actually ever going to police that anyway? Like,
well, that's
gonna,
what I was saying. Yeah. I mean, how does that, I mean, what does that work for podcasts? Because, I mean, can't I just say, well, this is downloaded? Or, I mean, you know,
right.
Some stuff you can do offline. And I still don't understand how, I mean, you cannot be touching your device, period. So I don't understand how, I mean, if you're touching your device, you're touching your device, which is against the law, but actually moving your hand to turn the radio dial, if
right,
you're
it's the same.
85 years old, I mean, that's the same thing.
Yeah.
So why is that okay? I mean, there's a whole thing. I mean, I have hypocrisy with driving. Like, you know, the earbuds while you're driving, on one hand, I mean, I do think that's stupid. But on the other hand, it's like you can be legally, I mean, you know, you can be deaf and still get a driver's license.
Right.
So, I mean, I don't know. The whole thing with driving, it feels like it's just such a, like a law of the day, you know, like all these new regulations. Like, you didn't even have this 50, 60 years ago where you couldn't buckle up. And I think the gist of them are good to agree. Like I said, with the hands-free, I mean, because, yeah, I mean, every day I drive into downtown Atlanta, there's some bozo, you know, texting away, not paying attention, nearly wrecked, stuff
right,
like
to
that.
Me,
that's
the real
fine.
Spirit of the law. To have,
right,
to punish if you're, you know, like switching a podcast quick, or, you know, for me, I've just been at red lights, I've been doing what I want to do. Like, I mean,
yeah,
I'm basically daring cops at red lights to do something, but I'm getting better with when I'm driving. I'm trying to be real good. But the, yeah, I mean, I didn't catch anything. I didn't read the actual bill, but I haven't seen anything, any news stories regarding, like, audio. I know you can't touch the device, but I haven't read anything about audio. But, I mean, I've switched podcasts and stuff while I'm driving still and whatnot. I mean, you know, it's like anything. It's like speeding. If you're paying attention to where you're at and, you know, you're alert of, you know, any 5-0 hanging around, you should be okay to still kind of do what you want to do.
Oh, they are prevalent around us, though. I mean, it's like, my drive's 50 miles home, I'll see at least 2 to 3 police off cops.
Right.
You know, easy. It is just, it feels like they're all over the place around here. But we'll see. I mean, I just think that's so stupid and, like, typical, like, them being able to lobby that in, you know, just to throw
it's
there.
Absurd.
It's absolutely ridiculous. But
so you're saying it's a live PD area?
Yes, live PD area. Have you ever watched that show?
You know, like, part of me is, like, interested, but because, like, now I'm kind of doing it out of spite, not watching it, because I'm so tired of seeing everyone fucking tweet and talk about it, like, and they were in Rhode Island, and I still, like, had no interest. I'm like, no, I'm not going to do it. It's probably something I'd like, but I'm like, I can't do it. I can't allow myself to get into it at this point, because I see so much of it.
I mean, it's... To me, it's entertaining to pass by, but it certainly draws a demographic, which apparently is
ties
the
same in close to wrestling.
Yeah. The same people that watch Raw on Monday nights religiously is apparently the demographic. Yeah. So, my sister-in-law's piece of crap boyfriend was the first person that alerted me to the live PD phenomenon. So there we go. He was in on the ground floor. This has been over a year ago. He was all in. So there you have it.
I think Zellner was probably the first one I saw.
Yeah. Well, that is Yeah, this is right down the Zellner wheelhouse, but yeah.
I didn't even realize that it was like an actual TV show for a while. I thought it was just like an internet feed or something, the way they always talked about it.
Like listening to the scanner, yeah.
Yeah, or this, yeah, like it was some website that like just carried, yeah, police department feeds. I didn't realize it was like an A&E show or whatever. Like it took me a while to piece that together. But I think the doctor's daughter is like super into it because she wants to be a police officer, so Dr. G.
Oh, well, there you go.
It's big in Norwalk, I guess. So.
All right, anything else? Are we ready to dive into these big shows from 1995?
Let's do it. So last week we started with Raw, so why don't we flip the script and start over in WCW land this evening. So that brings us to Nitro. And Chad, where was this episode emanating from?
Now, they didn't say.
Oh, okay.
So, but it was from Augusta, right? I believe so.
Yeah, I can confirm right now.
Actually, 6A. My
Albany. Actually, good timing here is Albany, Georgia.
Albany, Georgia. So I knew it was one of the smaller towns. So that made sense. I mean, I think because they'd been in Denver, they'd been in Chicago. So going to Albany, Georgia is quite a step down. And what, I mean, okay. So
but it's good, it's good timing. Albany, it's good timing,
good
though.
Good timing.
Because
it's
we
a good
just
tie-in.
Yeah, we just did a Great American Bash 92 in our Group Watch Champions post today. Which is also in Albany, Georgia. But go ahead. I'm sorry I cut you off.
Well, I mean, I think as we see with some of my comments for this show with the crowd, that also matches some of the stuff we saw at the Great American Bash 92 show. I mean, Albany's just a weird town. I mean, it's like it's a very mid-sized town that has a very big racial divide between the two areas. So the downtown area is prominent African American, and then the suburbs, they kind of clash together. So it's a town I actually have been in a lot lately for work, or I guess about a year or two ago I was down there for months at a time, and an interesting town, not one of my favorites in Georgia.
It's too bad WCW wasn't still around. You could probably be catching shows while you're
down
there.
I drove by the little Civic Auditorium or whatever where they had these shows. And it was, I mean, I guess I just don't know why they didn't go to Macon. Because, I mean, it seemed like Macon would be a better option than here. But anyway, so I guess we're in Albany. And, yeah, they never mentioned definitely embarrassed to be that. Now, Pepe's costume, I don't know what you'd call this. He called it Captain Love Dog. Basically, it looked like he was wearing like aluminum foil, with a little hat with a kind of alien ears, I guess is the best way to describe that. And then
did you also say it was aluminum wrap, maybe?
What did I say?
Aluminum foil, sorry.
Aluminum foil, sorry.
Would you ever call it aluminum wrap?
What are you talking about?
Fine, that's all right. Move on.
What's the joke?
It's not really a joke. I called tinfoil aluminum wrap in New Orleans, and I got like raked over the coals for like weeks about it. And I just think it's an acceptable term for what it is.
So there we have it. Another great WrestleMania memory that only four people know about, but
it was more than
gets
four.
Brought
it was actually
up
a,
and
it was a huge
else.
Poll in our big live chats group. If you remember.
There we have it. I tried to ignore all that. Okay. Anyway, aluminum wrap
with the bitterness.
Mongo, Heenan, and Bischoff don't tell us much in the beginning. We go straight to our first match, which is Diamond Dallas Page, the TV champion, versus. Never mind. We did get some stuff.
Oh, so yeah, I was about to say we got some pretty good info in the beginning.
Wait a minute. We got Eric showing us a clip from WCW Pro of all things of Flair asking Sting to be his partner. Sting says he's giving him the benefit of the doubt, but he says if Flair swerves him, he's going to leave him for dead. So
at least Sting is kind of aware of this time.
Sting is very cautious in teaming up with the Nature Boy. And I forgot, we did get a great line from Bobby on Pepe. He said to turn that tarantula around, and then when Mongo does, he said, oh, that's where the batteries go. So that was pretty funny.
I thought Bobby was pretty good to hear, too. He gives some background on Flair and Sting's history, so I thought that was good. Yeah, I like the open here.
He brought that up a lot in the match, too. So I have a critique of Bobby in one segment that we'll get to, but overall, pretty good night, I would say, for the announcers overall here for Nitro. And then, so now we get into DDP versus Johnny B. Bad, which the Diamond Doll, I guess she found a tanning bed in Albany, Georgia, because she was really bronzed, kind of an indistinguishable color. In fact, I'm watching Alicia Fox make her way down the ring at SummerSlam 2010 on my TV right now, and pretty close in tone to the Diamond Doll on this show. So there we have it. Johnny B. Bad also may be lighter skinned than the Diamond Doll on this night. He comes out, and before he gets into he gets into the ring, but before he can take his wardrobe off, DDP clocks him with the belt, beats on him some more, and then pins him, but the bell never rung, so DDP has to make the count for himself. In a funny moment, I thought he shoots off the Bad Blaster right as he makes the pinfall, and then he celebrates. So they ended up saying Johnny B. Bad won by DQ.
Right.
But, I mean, the bell never rung. Yeah. So, yeah, I didn't call it an official match. This was just a segment to kind of set these guys up as they are they're going to be facing off at Halloween Havoc, which was something we thought was in the past. But it was actually
it was the Spring Stampede. But yes, right. The feud itself is coming up here.
And we saw a clip of that from Saturday night when I guess I forgot about this angle. So yeah. DDP stole Johnny B. Bad's tires. What was the implication?
Well,
here?
Bad was supposed
about
to get
like hubcaps.
Yeah, Bad was supposed to get his title match that he won at Fall Brawl on Saturday night, but he no-showed. So I think Pillman ended up getting it against Sting. And then it's revealed he shows up and it's revealed that he had like a flat tire or whatever. So basically he confronts Paige and Max Muscle, and it's actually one of my favorite lines of all time, where he goes, "I didn't say four flat tires." Ah! And then he like punches Paige in the face. I said a flat tire. Because it turns out Max Muscle basically slashed all four tires, and Paige gives up the jig by saying four instead of one, which Bad had said. So he's basically like, "How do you know?" But the way Bad says it and then like punches him was like one of my favorite moments of all time. So I said, "Hey, flat tire." He's like, "This is like big open mouth thing." And, like rares back and clocks him in the mouth. So yeah, he cost Bad a U.S. title match basically by slashing his tire. So
okay. Any thoughts on this angle we saw on Nitro?
I thought it was good. I thought it was good heat building. It was a good way to kick off the show with some, you know, we've talked about this before, Nitro really bringing like a touch of that kind of what ECW had going on a little bit, where it feels a little chaotic, unpredictable. It's not as formatted or regimented. Stuff like this can just kind of happen and take it completely off course. And it sets us up well for Halloween Havoc. You know, I think Paige has developed as a pretty good heel. We've talked about him a bit before. But I thought this was well done. It's set up between the Saturday night and this, it's setting up the feud well.
Yeah, I thought this was a fine mid-card feud to fill out a card. So that was good. And then we go to break. We come back and we get a pretty tasty looking match on paper. Chris Benoit versus Eddie Guerrero. This is the in-ring debut for Chris Benoit.
The in-ring return for Benoit. If you remember, he was there, you know, in 93 or whatever.
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. Yeah. Kind of the.
Yeah.
I mean, what did he do besides Super Brawl?
He was on a bit, I think.
He had the Clash. I think he was in the Clash. But besides that,
Because he was in the tag tournament. Wasn't he in the tag tournament too?
Yeah, so he kind of made a couple of appearances, but is really him becoming a signed by the promotion full timer, so forth.
Right.
Eric gives us our first word of the big boys play for the night. I think that was the only one I caught. So pretty good.
It looks like he did at least one house show. He did a lot of Japan stuff for WCW, and then at least one house show, and then the Clash and Super Bowl. I'm sorry, no, that's 92, actually. I didn't check 93. So he actually did a couple things at 92.
That would have been the tournament, right, if he did the Clash.
Yeah, he did the Clash in 92. He did Saturday Night in 93, a bunch of Saturday Night stuff. He worked house shows in 93. So
yeah, the 93 Saturday Night is something I'm not too familiar with, because I know a lot of 92 with the Dangerous Alliance, but
Main Event, Power Hour. He was in the TV title tournament. Yeah, he did a lot of stuff. I think he's there for
That's cool. Yeah. So he was there for a couple month run. Good for him. He's back. He's wearing some blue tights with a star on the back of them. A question I had. Now, what do you think is their most high profile match against each other?
I want to say, I don't know, is it Vengeance 03, you think?
That's what I was wondering. I mean, because these two, like, I feel like most of their matches together are very good, mm-hmm. even great in WWE. But, you know, they don't, I mean, even it feels like, you know, like, I mean, obviously, like, Malenko and Eddie have the ECW stuff. And even like Benoit and Malenko have the Hog Wild 96 match, which
right.
is, you know, pretty memorable and infamous or whatever. So it feels like with these two, like, even though they've had a bevy of good matches, because they fought at what was it, Armageddon 02 as well.
Yep.
I didn't know what would be considered the kind of most memorable match between these two.
I'd say Vengeance 03 is probably the most famous. I mean, that might be their best as well. Because it's for the U.S. title, the end of the tournament, you know, it's a good finish. So, yeah, I'd say that. I mean, that's probably my favorite between the two of them. I'd say it's probably the most famous.
Yeah. So, here's what I thought about this one. We got some opening mat work, a nice arm drag and head scissors by Eddie. Then he hits a huge tope on the outside. He got big air. Looked great. He sends Benoit into the post and tries to follow up on it, but he whacks the post with his arm, and Benoit just destroys the arm from that. He does a barrage move, including a Northern Lights suplex with an infamous on the arm. I thought Bischoff was very good on commentary here, being mm-hmm. impressed with Benoit and how he is attacking the arm, and his focal point was the arm. And here's where I had my critique of Bobby, because I thought this was kind of Bobby just being a dick to be a dick, because Bischoff at one point says, like, I don't know if he really hurt his elbow or his shoulder, which to me, I mean, that's like a sensible talking point
right.
to get over the danger. And Bobby's like, oh, it doesn't matter. It's the arm. You know, it's kind of very nonchalant and dismissive. So I thought that was kind of a misstep by Bobby. He does that from time to time, I think, with both Tony and Eric, from what I've seen, where I don't know what it is, if it's just like, because, you know, he has his heel character, but this, like, very, like, dismissive and nonchalant and not in his heel character way. So, always bugs me. I feel like he gets kind of a pass on that from time to time.
I agree.
When he has missteps on commentary.
I kind of wonder if it goes hand in hand with, like, the Gorilla stuff, where Gorilla would always, like, they'd do this shtick with Gorilla calling the fancy name for the body parts, and he would say, that's the arm.
Right.
You know, like, so I don't know if it's like that. Like, he's trying to kind of rekindle that a little bit. Yeah, I mean, I love Bobby, but I'm not a big WCW Bobby fan. Like, he's got his moments, but I think even as early as here, like, he's already not great. Like, even in 94, he has, you know, hits and misses. But by 95, like, when I rewatched all this stuff a few years ago, like, the clashes and the pay-per-views and this, all through 95, like, he's already kind of showing wear and tear. And then once the NWO comes around, after the initial, like, I told you so with Hogan, where he just basically has to kind of become a face. It's just like he just loses interest. Like, the last years of Bobby are rough in WCW.
Yeah, yeah. We'll chronicle all that. But that was just a kind of moment I had, because I thought Eric, you know, he's been distracted before when we've had these cruiserweight, you know, high octane matches. And here he was on point, because he was really trying to get Benoit over. And I think because they were pushing Benoit over so hard as being so menacing, that helped Eddie as well, mm-hmm. kind of as a byproduct of that because he also, you know, looked very impressive in his moves throughout this match. Bischoff gives a little bit of a shots fired, saying this is the only live wrestling show you'll see tonight. Eddie starts making his comeback. He's still favoring the arm. He does hit a beautiful head scissors that Benoit has to get his foot on the rope to break up the pin. Eddie goes for the frog splash, but Benoit gets his knees up, and then now this is a memorable moment that you see on, like, GIFs and stuff like that, where Benoit gives Eddie one of the most spine-tingling power bombs you'll ever see in your life.
Yeah.
I mean, his head bounces completely off the mat. It is pretty disgusting. That gets a very close near fall. It also woke the crowd up. This is where I shit on the crowd, as I thought they were pretty disappointing throughout this match.
Mm-hmm.
Not giving them the response they kind of deserve. Certainly not as hot as like the Chicago crowd for Sabu and JL. And this match is much tighter and cleaner than that match. So then we get a little bit more back and forth. Eddie tries a shot with a bad arm, but it costs him, and Benoit is able to hit a dragon suplex, which, you know, none of the announcers knew what exactly to call that. But he picks up the win. So I thought, as far as the TV shows is concerned, this was my favorite match we've watched so far. I thought it had a crispness to it, which we have seen some from, the Sabu stuff, but again, I thought it was much tighter, had the arm work, which is something I always love, limb work that is focused and plays into the finish, so it wasn't blown off here. I was very impressed with both, and this was a really good match in my mind. I went 3.5 stars.
Yeah, I really liked it a lot. I went 3.25, so a tick less than you, and tied with two other TV matches we've seen, Bret Hart and Jean-Pierre, and the six-man from last week on Raw. So it's the best Nitro match we've seen in my eyes, and tied for the best we've seen overall in a dream match. I mean, another one they can just throw out there. We talked about this last week as well, the stuff they can chuck out. Nice opening flurry. I love the dive to the floor by Eddie was just perfect. The stiff offense by Benoit. Eric plugs the hotline here. It says there's double hot information on the hotline tonight. So check that out. Lots of talk about other angles and matches as the match went on. But like you said, the commentary on putting over Benoit was real strong. I like the arm work by Benoit. As Bischoff then talks about the Braves. Again, his weekly Braves update. They're in the World Series tomorrow night. But they don't know if they're going to play Seattle or Cleveland. Did that go 7 games, Seattle-Cleveland? I thought it went 6 for some reason. But
I don't know.
Did they sweep quicker?
Oh, yeah. They swept the Cardinals. So
okay.
That may be... I can look it up real quick, how many games the ALCS win.
Yeah, I feel like it was 6, but I could be wrong.
6 games.
Okay, there you go. It's sad that I remember that so quickly, but yeah. 6 games. 2 teams I don't really care about. And I was actually aggravated because, of course, Cleveland had beaten the Yankees. Great springboard head scissors, stiff German, and brainbuster by Eddie, and then Benoit just makes up for, like you said, with just a disgusting powerbomb. If you haven't seen it, it's probably worth checking out just for the car wreck aspect of it. And you know, we haven't really brought this up, but I don't think we need to belabor the point, but like Scott and I in Place to Be, Chad, we're going to cover Benoit as a wrestler and not get into the other stuff. Now worry about the other stuff, but we're not going to ignore him, and we're not going to put him up on any kind of pedestal, but we're going to talk about him as a wrestler.
Yeah, it's always a tricky subject, and I think something that like Aaron was talking about in the No Holds Barred podcast that I listened to today, which I recorded last night. Watching this match today kind of gave me pause to that because, he was talking about, the emotional connection, how he doesn't have that with the current product. And, when I was growing up, I did have that with Benoit because
right. He
came on the scene right as the time when I was, becoming on the up and up with the wrestling business, 9, 10 years old. So he was kind of my first, work rate guy that I got behind. But of course, with the tragedy of what happened to him and the despicableness, the despicable act that he did, that also, is why maybe I can't create that emotional connection with anybody now. Obviously, me being older may be part of it, but I also think part of it is feeling, kind of slighted by Benoit. That's, of course, a minuscule byproduct again of what happened,
right. But
it's just interesting to think about that because I watched this match, I was like, yeah, I really see why I got behind this guy because this match overall was just it just felt different. Like to me, the action felt even different from what we've seen of the big work rate spot fest on Nitro, and I think just the crispness and them being able to hit most of the moves cleanly really helped. Because Sabu feels dangerous and out of control, but, some of those spots are sloppy, and when he hits the kicks, they don't really hit very flush and stuff like that. But, everything here from when Eddie thuds the pose to the powerbomb to the chops they were giving each other, it was stiff, you had high flying, and again, you had limb work. So this was like the total package.
yeah.
As far as wrestling action.
And it's a hard-fought win by Benoit. Like you said, just a crisp match, hard-hitting offense. The flow is great. And it's, again, to speak to the depth of what WCW has going on right now, that this is a match they can just chuck out on Nitro to fill out a card. Whereas on Raw, we're getting, you know, Aldo Montoya and Skip and these guys.
Yeah.
And here, we're getting Benoit Eddie for whatever it is, you know, 7-8 minutes. And it's like not even a feud or showcase match. It's just a match on the card. I mean, yes, they're putting Benoit over, but... It just speaks to what, you know, the roster they're building is just so much depth to it compared to what WWF is rolling out right now.
And I just, quick sidebar, I looked up the run times for the World Series games in 95.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable, like, how long these games last now. So, I mean, game one, 2 hours, 37 minutes. Game two, 3 hours, 17 minutes. Game three was 4 hours and 9 minutes, but it was 11 innings.
Right.
Game four, 3 hours and 14 minutes. Game five, 2 hours, 33 minutes. Game six, 3 hours and 1 minute. That's just insane. I mean,
so what do you think it is?
I think it's, you know, a lot of your situational bullpen is mostly. But I also think, you know, people like stepping out of the batter's box after every pitch. I don't think you had that.
Right. Well, they don't anymore, right? They're not allowed to anymore.
They're not allowed to, and I do think the speed of play has went up somewhat this year.
I'll say this. I've attended two games live this year, Yankees-Indians and Yankees-Phillies, one in Philly, one in Yankee Stadium, and both games were, like, under 3 hours. One was 2.5, and one was, like, 2:40. And you could tell the difference. You know, the shorter breaks, the less in and out between the box. The mound visits is a big one that they, you know,
yes,
this year. That's a big one.
And yeah. I actually like that. I mean, that rule seems silly, but yeah, I mean, because it just get. I mean, the stepping out of the box drove me nuts every time because, I mean, when I played in high school on a little level, but I mean, that always broke my concentration, like to step out of the box. I did not want to step out of the box and to step out of the box and have to do whatever with your gloves and, you know, tap your toes and then step it. I mean, after every freaking pitch, it's like, come on. We cannot have 10 to 12 seconds between a pitch. It's ridiculous.
And I think part of it, too, is the focus on base. You know, walk is, you know,
big
as a hit. And, like, so guys just get better, sharper.
And stuff, yeah.
And then the implosion, you know, explosion of offense. I think that mid-90s, you know, right after the strike, like 95 was still, you're getting there. Like, the explosion's coming soon. But you're still more in, like, the pitcher dominant era before, like, the offense just went bananas and the games get even longer. Like, you know, you just think a lot of the Yankees Red Sox games of 2000, like teams like the Angels and the Giants that is eight pitch after pitch after pitch, and would walk and, you know, tons of offense. So I think that's starting to come down too, is I think the pitchers are getting so overpowering again in a way. And you're seeing batting averages dip as part of it. So I think that's speeding up the games as well too, is, you know, having a little bit less offense than we had throughout the 2000s. So
yeah, I mean, Maddox also is a notorious fast pitcher. So his two starts that series were the 237 and the 233.
Right.
So, I mean,
those were pretty big outliers.
He was great. He was very brisk. So, but still, I mean, yeah, you know, we'll see this year, but a 3 hour World Series game would be very nice and welcome. It's or a 3 hour ALCS.
Oh, so, well,
if
you get a Yankee Red Sox.
Yankees,
yes, if you get that, but you're not going
to
get that.
Yes, please.
Although, tonight game, so they're in the top of the seventh right now already, and it's only been 2 hours, so they're moving along tonight.
Anything with Joe Madden, also probably not a possibility with his situational stuff, but I digress. Okay, so do we want to call this a hidden gem?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
I know we had said 3.5 was kind of our barrier, right? But I think 3.25 is. Oh, you went 3.5. So yeah,
I went three and a half.
Yep,
and
yep.
I think we actually did. I mean, I think we lowered it, but now that we're getting these matches, we may need to raise it to 3.5. So
what
did
we have?
Say,
what did you have Hart Lafitte at? That I
had? I'm pretty sure 3.25.
Okay. Yeah, we put that on the list. So
yeah. So I mean, I know I didn't have 3.5 for that.
I think
so,
3.25 is a good barrier because it's over 3, which is very good. And then if you get to that level, it's a hidden gem. And then I think if you get anything that is, like, really – like, I think 3 to 4 is our hidden gem range, or 3.25 to 4 is our hidden gem range. And then when you get over 4, I think we start talking, like, hidden great, you know? It's not just a gem. It's like almost like a hidden great match in there.
Yeah, I mean, when I watch the yearbook stuff, I mean, that obviously won't have everything, but it has a good sampling. Usually with the yearbooks, the top 100 matches, like my matches 95 through 100 for the year will be 3.5 stars. Or, you know, even like the bottom 10 will be 3.5 stars. So, yeah, I mean, when you're getting to 3.5 stars, you're starting to flirt with what might be one of the top, you know, at least 150 matches worldwide that year, which is pretty good. I mean, when you talk about how many matches you have on tape. So, yeah, I mean, I thought this certainly qualifies as a hidden gem. So there we go. Okay. We transition to the booth where Bischoff says a cruiserweight division and championships in the works. And then we get the Mean Gene interview with the Giant, and Gene has some big news on the hotline. So he says a WWF official has left, and also a superstar got beat up by the fans. So you can call the hotline to find that out. We do know, I mean, of course, I know what the superstar situation was, but I did not want to read the Observer that talked about that because, you know, I wanted to keep our real-time kind of feature and what Dave said on that. But the WWF official, do you know who that is? We can maybe sound stupid when we find out, but because I didn't know. I didn't know who he was talking about.
So first I thought J.J. Dillon, but then I'm a year off. That was 96, but it's Bill Watts, right?
Oh, already?
I think he's gone already, yeah.
Oh, that was quick. Okay. we'll see.
Someone said it in the, I think we'll get to that a little bit later in our feedback for this episode. Someone mentioned, I think, that Watts was done already. I think that episode we talked about last week was his last one. So I'll see. It's in here somewhere.
I meant to mention this at the top, but Dave in the Observer for like this week leading into the show, he said WCW had not released Vader yet, which is crazy. He said at this point he was still suspended without pay. So I thought that was interesting.
That's weird.
And also this was a nice tidbit. As of right now, and obviously this can change, Flair isn't scheduled to turn on Sting at Havoc.
So, okay, we'll see.
Keep that in your back pocket. And then we also have some nuggets for a Raw when we get there. Okay. But anyway, we get the Mean Gene Giant interview. Sullivan's the mouthpiece for the majority of this. I thought he did a pretty good promo. Mm-hmm. I mean, it wasn't bad, but it was fine. He talks about kind of the drastic change of Hogan dressing in black, and all this was a result of them shaving his mustache and how that killed Hulkamania and whatnot. And then Sullivan says after Havoc, the Hulkamaniacs will be servants to the Dungeon of Doom. And then he turns it over to the Giant. Now, the Giant didn't say much at all. He kind of just had his sort of quick lines to hit. But then the big point of emphasis, I guess, they wanted to do was he puts his whole hand over Gene's face, kind of emphasizing the size of it. This was sort of like the Andre with Bob Uecker bit where you can see just how massive the hand is of the Giant. So, you know, pretty good promo overall to set up the main event for Havoc.
Yeah, Giant kind of busts out his infamous Hogan impersonation here, just a little bit. He doesn't go full on with it, but he gets a little bit of it in. And he promises he's going to push Hogan off the roof with the monster truck and the title will be his. So we'll see if it fulfills that promise.
We get the monster sumo action graphic, of course. Rundown of WCW Saturday Night. Hogan's actually going to be on Saturday Night. And they talk about Hugh Morris as a newcomer. Eric mentions him. And that leads us into our next match, which is Mean versus Hacksaw Jim Duggan. Disco Inferno's music fires up.
Here he comes again, Eric, unscheduled.
Yes, Eric says, this guy's making me cough up my toenails, which was a funny line. And then Mean's music starts, and he chases Disco away. Now, Mean was wearing a cape here with a eye hole, you know.
Right.
He looked like a lost Viano brother. That's what it looked like to me. It was awful. I don't know what that bit was, but thankfully that went away. Hacksaw got a big pop. Some decent hoss action here. This is kind of your quickie match of the night. And unfortunately, I did have to admit that probably the crowd was hotter for this match than Benoit versus Eddie. Which was kind
of
sad.
Of course,
but,
a bunch of hillbillies fired up for the Americana.
Yeah, this is bad. So, I mean, Duggan, I thought, had a couple of good punches, but eventually runs into the mean kick, and then Hacksaw's out as he gets locked into the Tonga Death. This was more like a spike. It wasn't the Tonga Death group.
Right,
yet.
Yeah, it was
a
Tonga
Death. So he does the the spike here.
Asiatic spike.
I don't think Duggan, I mean, and I guess it was just like he didn't physically submit or verbally submit or tap out. I guess this was just the official decided he'd seen enough. But, you know, I mean, a quick victory against Duggan mm-hmm. still felt like a rare feat at this point in time.
Yeah, right.
So I thought this was a pretty good, you know, enhancer for me heading into Havoc versus Luger.
I mean, Duggan's only a year removed from squashing Steve Austin.
That's true.
You know, so yeah, I mean, you're right. It's like throughout 95, he's, you know, protected well enough. Like he's not moving up the card, but he's also not just jobbing out. So
I gave it a 3/4 of a star.
I went
new hidden gem.
Lost my grades here. So what the hell were you? 10/16. I actually went a star and a quarter. So I
there you go. Big fan.
I did like it. I like the brawling up. I like, you know, Bischoff mentions where Sullivan is. He's out of here with Ming. But no, I thought it was fine. I'm a Haas brawl guy, so I enjoyed it.
And so this and the Sting versus Shark battle that you loved the week before. You're loving the squashes, the 2-minute little Haas battles here. All right. So after that, what happens? Oh, we get the Hogan tape promo.
Oh, yeah.
Now, this, he's still in his black. We get kind of the gray and light black backdrop. Hogan, again, talks about the Giant being Andre's son. He says he slammed his father in front of 94,000 people, calls him the big stinky Giant. So a pretty rough start to begin this promo. Then Jimmy Hart says he's worried. And then I thought Hulk was better. He kind of gives his rah-rah promo as usual, you know, reassures us. We did, unfortunately, get another big stinky Giant thrown in there.
Big stinky, filthy, warty Giant.
Yeah, this was kind of par of the course for Hogan around this time, and I'm just not really feeling it. Ugh. Even I thought with him going darker,
it's worse.
That,
I think it's been worse.
Might improve, but yeah,
it feels lame. It's like when Jerry Seinfeld tries to be dark and disturbed, everyone like laughs at him. It's like Hogan, like he can't just like play brooding. Like he's just like overacting brooding. Like, I am angry, brothers. You know, it's just like so fucking
right.
Dumb. And then my favorite part was his pronunciation of Don Corleone. Yeah, just basic shit. And between the Don Corleone and the big, stinky, filthy, warty Giant, I'm over Hulk, Black Hulk, so White Hulk, whatever Hulk we got going on, I'm done with.
To defend that, Nick Duke. Thank you. So then that leads us right into our main event, right?
It does.
Which is Arn Anderson and Brian Pillman versus Ric Flair and maybe a partner, maybe Sting. Mm-hmm. But we'll see. Flair's out on his own at first. This is where I did like Bobby. I thought he was invested in this. He brings up the history and says they haven't teamed in 5 years. And then there was a great moment at the very beginning of this match where Flair gives Pillman a chop, and Randy Pee Wee Anderson takes a bump off the chop because it was so impactful. and it is just great refereeing, oversell by Pee-wee, but I enjoyed that. Flair fends off both, crowd's all fired up, Flair's kind of strutting around, you know, complete babyface Flair, and the crowd's really into it. On the outside, Flair sends Pillman into the guardrail and struts again. Flair has Arn in the figure four back inside the ring and moves out of the way as Pillman tries to dive. Arn and Pillman finally get the advantage, and here comes Sting running out to a huge pop. Arn and Pillman work over Flair a bit, and then he's able to make the hot tag to Sting. This is a great hot tag. Mm-hmm. Sting is just a house of fire. It's a drop kick, bulldog to Arn. Stinger splashes to both. We get a great classic Mongo line here where he says he hasn't seen a house get clean like this since the Republicans took over from the Democrats. So there's your political leanings of Mongo. Atomic drop. For Arn on the outside, Sting catches Pillman and crutches him on the top rope. And then Sting helps Flair up on the apron as they get the count out victory. The bell was kind of late to run. Like, Anderson kept calling for the bell and it never rang. So that was a little bit awkward until they announced they were the winners, but that got a big pop, and I thought this was a really fun match, actually, and really worked over the storyline they're going for, so I ended up going 2 3/4 for this match.
Yeah, I went 3, so I liked it as well. Bischoff, of course, all the wondering if Sting will show up early on, and as the crowd chants for Sting, you got Bischoff saying that Hogan's scaring him, and Bobby said he's never been in the darkness like this before. It's like, if he's actually doing anything dark or scary, I'd get it, but he's not. He's just like he's a clown. Like, they shouldn't be scared of him. Like, oh, I'm so scared of what he's going down this dark path. It's like, no, he's not. He's wearing a black shirt. He's a, you know, he's a kid faking being like emo or goth or whatever. It's just like so stupid. So Flair gets the figure four on Arn, has to break it, do the diving Pillman. I like that spot. And just full of energy and madness throughout this match, Flair is. He gets the figure four on Pillman too, just bouncing between guys. Flair is like one of my favorite guys when he's got the, like, when he's a face with the numbers against him, he's so much fun in that role because of his manic pacing and energy and how quickly, you know, Piper's like that too, how quickly he can bounce between guys and batter them both. He's really good at that. So when he's in roles like this, I enjoy it. You know, Flair gets into some trouble, fights through it. Arn gets that spine buster after the Pillman kick, and that's when Sting comes out. And like you said, the tag to Sting was great. And I love the stooging bumping by Arn and Pillman. They're two of the best at it, and Sting's beating the shit out of them. And then I did think the finish was confusing as well. But yeah, it was a really fun tag match. I liked the bumping and the selling and the hot bit with Sting's arrival. So a good story throughout all this, and it sets us up for Halloween Havoc, where we're going to, you know, presumably get Sting and Flair together the whole match now, because Sting has seen that he can trust Flair because of Flair's actions tonight.
Yeah, we get a interview segment with Gene. He says he agrees with Mongo on the comment about cleaning the house. And then Sting says he had his reluctance is out the door. Sting says there wasn't a soul in the world that he could trust the Nature Boy. And then he says he had a lot of guts tonight and was showing some heart. And Sting says because he has that guts, he knows he's walking on the straight and narrow. They give a high five. And then Flair says, let's hear it for the Stinger as promo wins. So that was a good, I thought that was a good promo of them two together, showing some camaraderie. Mm-hmm. As we wrap up the show. So then we kind of get our usual announcer wrap up for like a minute where Bobby says he's tired of Sting and Flair being together. Bobby tells Mongo to step outside with him as they get into a little argument as the show goes off the air. Bischoff gives us our rundown for next week, and that is that. So this was another fast-paced, you know, filled up all 45 minutes of airtime Nitro that we saw tonight.
Yeah. All right. So why don't we get to our awards for the evening? I think match of the night is pretty self-evident. I'm guessing we're both going Guerrero Benoit.
Yes.
My favorite moment was Sting's arrival in the match. I had the pop for that. And then he gets up on the apron. I thought it was really cool.
Okay. I went for the promo with them two, specifically probably the high five.
Yeah,
I thought that was a cool moment. So, yeah, that was nice to see from, I mean, really, if you're a long-term fan, you know, you kind of, I mean, watching this angle, I don't think it is, like, painfully obvious that Flair is going to turn on him. So, they've done a pretty good job at least kind of stringing you along so far.
Yeah, there's a lot of animosity built up between Flair and Arn. It doesn't feel like a setup. Like, why would they be beating the shit out of each other for months to be a setup? And we'll see how that plays out, by the way. Right. Because right now, it is kind of like, okay, are they really just doing this to fuck with Sting, or did it really start as a animosity, but somewhere in this next week they come to terms? You know what I mean? Like, I'm curious how that comes about.
Right. Yeah, we'll see how they explain it when we get there.
My MVP of the night was Flair. I loved him in throughout the match and then at the end, too.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to go with Benoit just because this was his in-ring debut, and I thought he did really well to shine in that match. So I am going to go with Chris Benoit there.
All right. Quotes of the night. I had a couple. Bischoff on DDP. This guy's trash, human trash. I like that one. If you're not a WCW fan after watching this, you're dumber than dirt, from Mongo. Heenan calling Duggan a 300-pound termite made me laugh. And then the house cleaning, like the Republicans took out the Democrats. I had that as well.
Yeah, that one was probably the highlight for me, from Mongo throwing that one out there.
And then the only shots fired I had was the Gene talking about the hotline, the official getting fired, and the star getting to a parking lot fight with fans.
Yeah, I got that one, and then also just Bischoff mentioning this was the only live show, wrestling show, so he did throw that in there. So we have that. Did you get a rating? I forgot to look them up.
No, I forgot to. Do you want to look
okay, them up? Okay, I'll look it up when we take our break before Raw, so I'll have that so we can have the winner. So that's that, right?
Well, final grade.
Final grade, yes.
This is the highest rated show I've done so far. I did a 7 out of 10 for this episode of Nitro.
Same rating for me. I thought this was the best show we've seen as far as total package altogether, which we actually didn't see the total package
right,
tonight. It's kind of the first one. I don't think we've missed one with he's not on or Macho, but they took a break, but everything else, I mean, I thought with this show, you got the good matches, good enough angles. I mean, I thought the main event for Havoc, while I haven't been impressed with Hogan's promos, I mean, Hogan versus Giant does seem like a fresh, you know, big matchup that could have some intrigue. I mean, the monster stuff, I mean, it's like, it's a very weird main event because there's some parts that I'm excited about, mm-hmm. but then there's so much hokiness, too, with the monster trucks. It's like, there's kind of a good angle and program deep inside of there, but there's also a lot of crap associated with it, too. But, yeah, 7 out of 10 for me. Best show we've seen.
All right, Chad. I think it's it's been a few days, but it's time to get to Raw. I guess we should – should we talk about our foibles before we get started?
Yeah, so it took a long time to look up that Nitro rating, but I can tell you they scored a 2.2.
Been working on it for days.
Yes. But no, oh, God, where do we even begin? So I guess, you know, as you talked about on the first time we recorded, you were in a different setup.
Yeah.
So that was kind of the crux of our issues there, if you want to elaborate a little bit on that, basically your setup.
Well, so I was having problems. I was the wedding video I'm editing. We talked about previous episodes. Yeah. It's like was
JT's
maxing out
productions is to blame for this.
It was maxing out my computer space, but I thought he had just enough like to get through the whole episode. But in the process of that, I was also trying to move like all my pictures and videos that I have on my computer over to an external drive. That process got reset while we were recording because I went to go move because it was uncomfortable. And I knocked the thing out. So, so that was finishing. After we hung up and we finished Raw the first time, I noticed I went to go look at the file and it didn't record anything. It was zero. So there was, it ran out of space on my computer. So now I'm like, fuck. And the pictures are still, you know, copying over. So I messaged you and it was still like fairly early on Friday night. I don't know. It was like 10:15 maybe when I messaged you. So we're like,
yeah.
All right. So luckily we had started early the night. So like, okay, why don't we find someone that can record for us and we'll just do this again and finish it off. So we hit up Mr. Glenn Butler, normally very reliable, Glenn Butler. He's down. He's like, I just got home. Let me get my computer fired up, and I'll record for you guys. So he dials us in. We do it again the second time. And part of me is actually okay with this happening this time because I feel like that wasn't our best output because we were, like, both aggravated and tired. And I was, like, laying in my recliner holding my microphone. I didn't think it was our best outing. But anyway, so afterward, Glenn kind of jokes like, oh, I got a problem. Ha ha. You know, so we're all laughing off and we hang up. Not even like 90 seconds later, Glenn messages us like, I have an actual problem. His call recorder only recorded his mic, which apparently was picking him up, like walking around the house and talking, and it didn't record us at all. So our second attempt was thwarted. And you just, like, vanished. You went to bed angry, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah. I read the message, and then, like, I was in bed when he messaged me. Because by this time, I think it was 11:30 time we finished up. So I was in bed, you know, 6 a.m., the kiddos are going to be up. I saw the message. I didn't even respond. I just turned my phone over and just, like, went to bed angry. They said never go to bed angry. Well, I did on Friday night.
Yeah, I ended up, like, staying up trying to figure out the computer thing. Like, I was up to almost 1, and I finally passed out. And the reason, normally, like, that wouldn't be super late, but I had to get up to go help the fucking cowboy move, as we had talked about earlier in this episode. So I was up at 7, or I actually ended up getting up at, like, 6, and I was messing around with the computer more, and then I had to leave here. So I spent the whole day helping him move. But before I left, I figured out a different trick is that, or maybe it was when I go home, I forget when I did it, was I just, which I should have done in the first place, I just increased my iCloud storage and relocated the pictures there. It took 10 minutes and it cleared 80 gigs off my computer. Yeah. So that's fixed. But yeah, I spent the whole day, successfully moved the cowboy and of course Mr. Flanagan, who, you know, had a month. They both had a month to move, and it's still on this last day. Andy's apartment had like a, you know, him and his girlfriend's apartment had like a ton of shit in it still. So we had to get them both out. So we had to make two trips in the truck, and it was a whole fiasco with the truck that happened on Friday night too. Did I tell us on the air? I don't remember now. This whole thing.
I don't remember if it was on the air or not. Yeah, we did because I remember. I said I couldn't rent a U-Haul that one day.
Right.
Too.
Okay.
Yeah,
so we talked
about
it.
We had the flatbed.
Yeah. So the flatbed actually worked well. It had a little lift, like an electronic, you know, electric lift where you bring it up and down.
That's clutch. No, that's good.
Yeah. So it actually worked out, I think, better than a U-Haul would have. So anyway, I go home around 3:30 Saturday, and we were going to record Saturday night.
Right.
And then this is when your life intervened.
Yes. So Saturday I had a dinner party, but we took the kids. So, you know, we had to get back at a decent hour to get them in bed. So everything was going well. And then I get a call from my mom, my grandfather, who's 89 years old. He is very independent. He still likes cutting his own grass. He's very, very involved at his church down here. So he works in the church, changes light bulbs in the church, you know, just a very independent person, will not give up, and in good shape. I mean, he's probably in about as good shape as I am at 89. So, I mean, he's like weighs 135 pounds. So, you know, in good shape. Anyway, he was working on his camper, and thought he was on the bottom rung of his ladder, but was actually two rungs up, fell backwards. Essentially, from the description, it looks like he did a nasty plunge into the carport concrete. He landed elbow and hip first. So originally, they thought he broke his hip because he was in extreme pain.
Right.
Turns out he fractured his pelvic bone. So that was, but that was a fiasco. We was up to the hospital to about 3 a.m. Sunday, early Sunday morning. And his elbow and hip is just a disgusting mixture of green and purple bruising.
Old people bruising is the worst too. So I'm sure it's real nasty.
Yeah. This is really nasty. That was fun. And I've been dealing with that the past couple of days because again, my grandmother's still alive too, but she's about 90% confined to a wheelchair at this point. So neither one of them can take care of themselves, and it's just really my parents and me and my brother.
And I was like, I felt awful, and then like part of me was like, well, it's okay, we're not recording tonight. I'm fucking exhausted from being up late the night before, and so I have a feeling it would have turned out crappy anyway. But I'm glad your grandfather seems to be on the mend. That's good, I'm sure. You know, he'll fight it for a while and be stubborn, but he'll get there eventually.
Right, right. So, yeah, 4 to 6 weeks, he's out of commission, which is really tough. His job, he worked at the Ford assembly plant.
Yeah.
So, yeah, he's just always been so active. And it was about 15 years ago, he fell off a ladder again. This was about 15, 16 years ago. And he broke his ankle that time. He was able to kind of catch himself, but he broke his ankle kind of Sid style. But with that, he was in a boot, so he was still mobile. But, yeah, now he's not going to be able to be mobile at all. Had to have, you know,
you should probably give him ladders. That's my guess.
Yeah, I'm thinking the ladder match is not in his future. But, yeah, so he has, like, they both have, like, the little portable potties, one on each side of the bed. It's quite a scene.
All right.
His and her matching portable potties.
Well, I hope you don't have to clean them at least.
No, I left that to my mom, so she can deal with that.
Yeah, that's her job. He'll be cleaning her soon enough anyway.
Let me tell you a quick story. So, you know, I used to audit nursing homes, right? And part of the nursing home audit we had to do a tour of the nursing home facility. One time we were doing this old nursing home. And with that, you know, we usually just like check in the rooms. We don't like examine them, but it's just like, oh, this is a private bed and this is a semi-private bed because that's different reimbursement that we had to check on. So one time
they swung open the door to this private bedroom, and the guy was just sitting there. And, I mean, you could not time it perfectly, but as soon as we swung open the door, he was in his bathrobe or whatever, in kind of the spread eagle position, and just completely shit himself.
Oh, God.
I mean, right as the door opened, and it was awful. And so they, like, the nurse that was leading us around looked at me and was like, oh, as you can see, we kind of have quite a problem here. I was like, yeah, it's good.
Yeah, we're all set. Like, room checks out. You're good.
Yeah, my audit is completed here. I'm not going whatever you say, lady, but it was just, yeah, that was awful.
You should have told her you needed a sample.
It was so bad. I mean, it's like one of the most, unfortunately, it's like one of the most vivid images in my life. Because, like, I mean, I was like dead eyesight seeing the event happen. And,
I think that's still a better image than I have of the DAT party where Scott passed out in my bathroom and I had to go clean him up and get him out of there. I think I'd rather see the old guy shit himself.
Those are pretty equal. Two old guys not handling their bathroom problems.
All right. So for a third time, we're going to try and get through this Raw. And it's not even a good, like, no. It was like a real good, like, 97 Raw. Maybe we'll be okay. But yeah. It's literally like this dog shit Raw we've had to talk about three times.
Yeah. Not exactly Jericho's debut or anything we're talking about with this Raw.
Okay, well, let's try. For all of you, you know, a lesser podcast would have just skipped it or mailed it in and said we're not doing it again. But we're gonna deliver for you.
So we're at Grand Rapids. This is our final taping of the Grand Rapids. It's the go home Raw to In Your House 4.
Yes. Still in Grand Rapids.
Still in Grand Rapids. And as you can see, they're kind of over the taping from the crowd heat we got tonight.
They're cooked.
So the first thing we see is kind of it's a little bit of a, I don't know what you'd call it, like a vignette or video package that shows Bret Hart, Jerry Lawler, and Isaac Yankem. It's an empty arena. They're in front of the cage. They kind of have the spotlight on them. And they basically talk about the match tonight, but they use a lot of dentist puns, just a lot of jokes in between. It's way overwrought with dental puns. Brett even says, like, Lawler and Yankem are the Tartar of the WWL. Overall, I thought this was really bad and really cheesy. Not one of the
scene. I get rather numb to these jokes quickly. It was it was a lot of puns. It was over the top.
I couldn't decide, like, who. I mean, this feels like a Vince thing that he, you know, the dental puns. But also from, like, listening to Bruce Pritchard's podcast lately, it seems like this was kind of up his alley too. So I don't know, but the jokes fell on mainly deaf ears.
Well, I think it was kind of a thing they do. Like, if you go back and watch, like, Superstars from like 90 and 91, like Vince and Piper, or like they'd have a theme for the episode and they would tell these corny jokes. So I think it's just like a running thing. Be like, it's, you know, whatever, Flag Day in the United States, you know, and then they'd make like five American flag jokes, you know. It's like they would always, or it's National Donut Day here in the United States, and they'd make like a bunch of donut puns. So I don't know if it's like just a WWF TV thing, because it definitely happened like at that time too.
I guess the best they ever did with that was probably those late 90s Saturday Night's Main Events.
Early 90s.
They did the 1990 or so, they did the Oktoberfest and the Safari or whatever thing.
Right.
Where they were there. Those are probably the peak of those actually being entertaining. The main thing was Jerry Lawler says Yankem's victory is under lock and key. So you knew that was going to play into the match early on. Then we get our introduction with Jerry and the King live in Grand Rapids, Justin?
Maybe live in Sanford. It was a real bad green screen. And all throughout this episode, the commentary is clearly, like, overdubbed through most of it. Like, they're not really doing a good job of blending it in with the crowd noise and making it seem normal. It's real obvious that they're doing this in post-production, and the green screen in the beginning is bad too. We're like peak, like, we don't give a fuck. We know we're taped, period.
Yeah, it was just really rough. So, that kind of leads us into our first match, which is, Doink
Jesus.
Making his Raw debut versus Hunter Hearst Helmsley, who had some, looked like some arrogance rip off.
Well, we should clarify, Raw debut for us. I mean, he's been on Raw since like early 93.
Oh, yeah, Raw debut, Monday Night Wars debut. Oh, yeah, he's beyond played out by the time we see Doink waddle out here.
I think I saw the mold falling off his arms as he was dancing out to the ring.
This was one step away from Golden Corral, Alabama Doink that we saw here. Yeah, Hunter, this cologne that he was spraying, that was kind of a new, arrogance kind of ripoff. But,
you know, one thing I want to track, too, as we go along, is everything they give Hunter to finally get him over. Like, I feel like they're constantly tweaking his character in every way possible, whether it's with a manager, a bodyguard, a heavy, the arrogance, you know, like all this kind of stuff. It's like they're trying to give him all the music. Like, there's so many tweaks and changes with him over the next like few years. So it'll be interesting to watch as they roll them out.
Yeah, we'll definitely have to keep tabs of when we see him bringing out the lady du jour.
Right. Yeah, that'll start up.
And that'll be a big one. So yeah, that will be something to keep on. This was a little wrinkle we didn't see in his first appearance here. And not much to this match. I guess Doink, I mean, he's straight up JTTS this level.
Oh,
I mean,
by far. All of 95, really.
Yeah, very little name value left, but one step above your nameless jobber is essentially what Doink is.
I think his last relevance was Survivor Series 94 with the Cons or Rush stuff.
Oh.
I mean, he's not even on pay-per-view in 95 outside of the Rumble.
Right,
so he's,
right.
I mean, 95, he's pretty much just there to, he's like George Steele in 88. Like, he's still cropped up on house shows in 88. That's like Doink. Like, he's there to pop the fans, be the goof, and eat a pin for most of 95.
There we go. So he gets some quick comedy stuff, does a side suplex, misses the elbow, Triple H takes over. They announce Triple H versus Fatu. For the In Your House show, which, as we talked about before, we didn't think they had any program.
I think it's just...
just kind of threw that together to pad out the card there. And then Doink gets a roll-up as, like, his hope spot, but he ends up losing to the Pedigree. Went half a star on this. Like I said, it was essentially a squash match to make Hunter look good, and Doink is pretty much done. This is the end of him on Raw, correct?
Yeah. So I think I have it memorized by now. But yeah, he's at the end of him on Raw. He's around like house shows a little bit into the end of the year, and then he was at the India tour, I think, in early '96.
Yes, he was on an India tour in '96. So him and the Great Khali are the big draws.
The big draws.
Yeah,
I think that was just his. It was just Lombardi probably working backstage when they had him throw on the paint and mask, is my guess.
Yeah, I was wondering. That's a good point. I wonder if it was like Ray Apollo or who.
No, I think Graham had it as Lombardi, so I think he was probably just working the tour and just.
They just threw it on there. Yeah.
But this is Doink's last TV appearance. He's on house shows a little bit until the end of '95, but this is pretty much it. And yeah, he's just an absolute fucking relic at this point. I think Doink had his relevance at one point, like right in 93 and even into early 94. Like, he's fine as a character, but at this point it's just like, okay, we're over it big time.
Oh, yeah. I mean, with Bourne there was a ton of potential.
Yeah,
even still, for like the level on the card, I think Doink is very memorable.
Mm-hmm.
Like, because he never, I mean, did he ever challenge for the WWF title? I don't think so.
I think the highest he got was really like being a legit threat, maybe in the King of the Ring. And
IC. I don't remember like an IC title match for him. He may have had one thrown out there.
I think his biggest moment as far as level on the card would be SummerSlam 93, where he's in the mix with Bret and Lawler, which is basically like a semi-main match.
Yeah, I mean, just seeing like his run right up to that point, really till Bourne flakes out. I mean, the USWA stuff in 93 complements it, and he has a really nuanced, interesting character that had a lot of legs to it.
Mm-hmm.
It's not definitely not as cheesy as you think, more it Doink than, what we saw once Dink and everything else came into the picture, and it just lost all relevance and became strictly comedy. That's also kind of like George Steele, you know, how he started as a heel and then
just a goof. There's a lot of Steele comparisons with him.
Yeah,
Steele's maybe Doink's maybe a poor man's version, because Steele was like the main eventer as a heel, getting title shots and stuff, and he has a longer run. But yeah, it's like a snapshot version of Steel. I mean, who is just awful in 88. I mean, I don't know why they're even bothering, but I just watched a house show match where he's like, they have a match with him, like May of 88 or whatever. It's like, Christ. But I think
that, he actually get in the ring?
He does, but it's all bullshit. Okay. He saddled poor Greg Valentine has to carry him. It's awful.
Oh, boy.
All right, so I think the most important pieces of this match are all on commentary. So Vince reveals that Mabel and Dean Douglas were fined $7,500 by Gorilla Monsoon for their actions last week.
Right.
And also we find out the Undertaker has a crushed face from that attack, too. So he's in jeopardy for Sunday at In Your House. We'll talk about that later. Lawler also mentions that Shawn Michaels was attacked in Syracuse. But Vince really kind of shuffles them off of that and says, we'll cover that later, too. So we don't get much, but it's kind of teased. And then other than that, yeah, we just get the announcement of Hunter and Fatu and then the match itself, which is nothing. So half a star for me, too, on this one, but not much doing.
There we go. So then we go to a really lame backstage segment between Barry Horowitz and Hakushi. Barry is teaching Hakushi baseball. He's teaching him the cultures of America. Unfortunately for Barry, baseball is pretty big in Japan.
Right, so, kind of missed on that one, yeah.
I would expect Hakushi at least had a little bit of a working knowledge of how the game went.
Well, and he actually, can't speak English, so he can't convey to Barry course, that he knows about it.
No idea. Of course, he does know Hank Aaron, so that impresses Barry. They hug. Pretty lame babyface duo here. Another kind of unfortunate for Hakushi, a guy that came in.
Yeah,
as a heel and was pretty real hot versus Brett and that In Your House match, and then
you know what it is? It's that fucking Hakushi skip feud. Anyone tangentially associated with that feud just came out for the worst. Like it ruined Skip.
Right.
It ruined Hakushi, and I mean it helped Horowitz, I guess that's about it. But even that, they marginalized him really quickly after. Like he's only a thing, and he's talented. Like he could have been more, you know. So like all three guys really don't benefit as much as they should have from that. And Hakushi just got dragged into it by, you know, Skip cost him a match with Horowitz, and then he cost Skip and basically turns face because of it. And instead of making him a high-level face, they just, you know, sludge him here with Horowitz, and that's it. He's gone by the end of the year, pretty much. Or he might be in early 96, and that's it. But, yeah, definitely a guy ahead of his time that we don't get enough of. We had a good match with the kid, the good stuff with Brett, and that's about it.
I could see Horowitz repackaged with Marty as the new Rockers if they hadn't went with Snow. Because he kind of has that goofy persona that
right.
might have worked with that.
They could have put him in there. Or just, I mean, like, I think he's even fine as a jobber to the Stars. Like, I'm not saying he had to be a title guy, but.
He's interesting. Yeah. I mean, because I watched a 2008 with him not too long ago. It's been about a year ago. But he's working strictly as a heel, and he's getting, like, really good heat and is real, like, swarmy character as a heel. Kind of like a creeper type gimmick that he was working with, like very over the top, but very effective. So I think he definitely had more potential even than what we saw here. But yeah, this all three of these guys, if you include Skip and these two, it's kind of, they just didn't really know how to, I guess, bottle them up and make them productive after that feud. All right, so where do we go from there? Into our next match, right?
Yep. Yeah, we go to the next match.
So we're PG-13 versus the new tag team champions, the Smoking Guns. So this now is a WWF tag team title match.
Mm-hmm.
And before we get to the match, Gorilla makes the determination on who Mabel will face at the pay-per-view. He decides it's Yokozuna since they joined together to put Taker out of action. So a pretty sensible ruling by Gorilla here, and
yeah.
We get the Big Hoss battle at the pay-per-view.
Poor Winnipeg fans, though. Robbed of an Undertaker appearance and now stuck watching Yokozuna and Mabel.
Yoko versus Mabel.
I was surprised PG-13 was still here, but then when I thought about it, I'm like, oh, it's still the same night.
Because, right.
So they really just came in for this one taping. It seems like
they've
been doing more. But,
yeah.
So they get a jobber match and then a title match, which is fine. But I really think they're a team that could have added some nice depth to a division that's really lacking it at this point. Like, they were fine. They could work. They had a gimmick built in. They were annoying. Like, they really could have used them during the stretch. I'm curious why, if we see them again, and if not, I'm curious why we don't.
Yeah, we'll have to see if there's any verbiage in the observers going forward about either Wolfie or Jamie backstage getting into a little bit of an altercation, because that was kind of par of the course for them. So this match I enjoyed for the limited time it had. PG-13 did some fun bumps off some backdrops where they landed on their feet and danced around. Here's where Lawler talks about the Syracuse, New York, and the altercation as we had to break again. And then we come back, we learn the Smoking Guns are doing the AOL chat, so, you know, mark that on your calendar.
It's a must.
Must listen. They work over Billy a little bit for the face and peril sequence. Hot tag to Bart. Bart has a good drop kick on his hot tag, and then they get the sidewinder for the pin for the guns. So, again, this was a, you know, pretty competitive match. PG-13 got some shine, but then did the job to the guns. Solid matchup. I went 2 stars on this one.
Yeah, I agree. 2 stars. It was solid. you mentioned the big part was Gorilla coming in from backstage to announce the big match for Sunday. King gets a Beavis and Butthead reference in there too, which was always appreciated. But yeah, the match was fine. I mean, I liked PG-13 works kind of that good controlled chaos in the ring, which I always appreciate from a tag team. So they were good there. I wish we had more from them. They'd qualify for the GWWE tag team project if they had like a better match. But it was fine for what it was. It was a good decisive win for the champs, but it was also a good showing for PG-13 if they were to stay around. Like, they don't look like schlubs. Like, they didn't just get waxed in this match. They're hanging in. And they could have really been just a fresh addition, like I said. So, a fun little sprint. Good enough. And the guns roll on.
Yep. They're starting. I'd like to see them in a program. That would be nice. Just to see a heated program. I don't even know what their next feud will be. So, we'll see.
Yeah, if they have one. As we've seen over the past 2 years, the tag team division doesn't always have a program. So, really, since, like...
Money.
Head Shrinkers Quebecers was kind of a program.
Yeah.
Because they were that built. Like, it wasn't just matches. So, I would say since the summer of 94, we
first
haven't really had much.
First quarter to summer of 94, they were starting to emphasize it, and then it devalued on the tail end. Yeah,
Shawn and Diesel got in. There's really no feud there. And then even early 95, like, he kind of had the blip with the guns and Kid in Holly. But that's not even really a feud. They do the tournament, and then, I mean, even Owen Yoko's champs, like, I guess they kind of feuded with the Allied Powers, but not really. There wasn't a ton of build to that match. So, so we really haven't had much of, like, a tag team depth or feud since. You know, with the guns and Well Done kind of had, like, a fake one for a while. But other than that, there's really not much else going on.
When we come back from break after that match, we get a Birth of Faye video package. That leads us into announcement that Bertha versus Alundra is happening next week. You know, we just talked about the tag division, not much going on with that. Same for the women's division.
And there's never any feuds. It's just like Alundra's champ, Bull Nakano comes in, beats her, nothing really happens. Then they have a rematch, Alundra wins it back. Then Bertha Faye came in, beat her for the title, nothing really happens, and here's the rematch. It's like, there's nothing going on. It's just like random. And I'm sure they were just working the houses probably against each other, you know, or on the road.
Right.
So they probably just, it's just her and Bertha have probably been fighting for months on end just against each other. So,
yeah, quick note. In the Observer, this was the week they negotiated the deal for the individuals we'll see in the Survivor Series match.
Mm-hmm.
There's a little bit of back and forth. They actually were in a little bit of a negotiating war over the Joshi workers with WCW over All Japan Women talent. And as we see at Survivor Series, they get a mix of All Japan Women and JWP, which is another women female promotion in Japan. Those are the ones that are actually involved in that match. So maybe they had grander thoughts going forward, but we shall see.
I'll be interested in Meltzer's take from that time. Yeah, if they were going to rebuild the division, because they do tease a match at the Rumble in the magazine that never ends up happening. So I'm curious if it was just, you know, Alundra walking and they said, fuck it, or if they were, you know, going to bag all that and then she walked. So I'm curious Dave's notes in that time period.
Yeah, because, I mean, as we'll see in the Survivor Series, they got some of the biggest names, like in Joshi. Right. I mean, but Bull Nakano in 94 was red hot, too. So,
And they really put over the team. The teams in that 95 match, I mean, it's not like a throwaway. Like, they are focused on it, and you know, Jim Ross, as we'll see, does, like, a great job. And they were clearly building through something with Alundra and Aja Kong.
Right. Which would have been a big match.
Yeah, so, but we'll see. I'll be curious in the Observer notes how that all falls apart.
And then we get a, after that, we get the interview with Davey Boy and Cornette. This was on the Action Zone with Doc. It's kind of a carryover from the gloaty promo we saw last week. This wasn't quite as gloaty, but again, they do a good job hyping the match. I thought you had Cornette saying his piece, and then Bulldog gets it in at the end to kind of bring us home. And he's done a pretty good job of presenting himself as a threat throughout this program, and they've set the match up good. We'll see the match. I got that coming up on the docket, but so far I've enjoyed the build. It's been pretty basic, but pretty effective, and they've done a real good job in elevating Bulldog to where he does seem like a legitimate threat.
No, I agree. They've done a really good job. He's been probably one of the best presented wrestlers we've seen throughout this on both Raw and Nitro. he's one that we really get into the ground floor because right when we started, he had just turned. So we've seen him grow in this role, and he's really been presented as a major player. Like I think they've done a great job with him. And yes, he's strengthened, and like I said, it's not just Cornette being his mouthpiece. He's getting to talk to, and he vows victory on Sunday. And even though Doc had said there's rumors that Bulldog only won last week because of Yokozuna, and he kind of shoots those down and says he'll take the title Sunday. So, no, I like this. It was good.
After that, we get our first look at Modib Ahmed Johnson, who talks about honor, doesn't say a whole lot. This is kind of a weird introductory promo. Basically, Ahmed taking on issues, civil rights issues, and other hard topics. So what do you think about our first introduction into Ahmed?
Yeah, I mean, it's fine. You don't really get to see much, and it honestly doesn't really make much sense. Like, they don't really establish him as why he's talking about these issues or, like, what his background is, so maybe that'll play out. So, yeah, it was just – I actually had forgotten that we even, like, saw him on TV until his debut. Like, I know he doesn't wrestle before Survivor Series, but I forget that we were even introduced to him as a person.
Yeah, I didn't remember these at all.
Yeah, so we'll see how they continue if we get more. But, yeah, it was kind of random.
Yeah,
I have a feeling these may make our dropped angles.
Yeah, one or two, and then quickly. He's debuting at Survivor Series, so whatever. We'll see. Then our next match, our third matchup, is a straight squash match. It's Dean Douglas versus Joe Dorgan. Dorgan's attire is horrendous. He had kind of a green and black tights on. Looked awful. So this, like I said, it's a basic squash. Dean ends up winning with the fisherman's suplex, right? And but the main focal point on this match was we got a phone call from Triple H. I always do that. I always have a Freudian slip. HBK. HBK calls in. And he was attacked, ambushed. It was a figure on exactly how many men attacked poor Shawn Michaels, and how many men was it, JR?
It sounded like 1,000 to Fert. No, he says 10 thugs beat him up. I will say this, though. They did a nice job of getting ahead of the story and, like, getting their side out, because if you weren't, like, dialed into the Observer or online, which was, as we've talked about, is really new. Like, I just assumed it was true that, like, 10 assholes just, like, jumped him and beat the shit out. Like, it wasn't until years later where I really got the full story. So they actually did a pretty good job, like, cutting this off at the pass and getting the word out. Whereas if you weren't in the area reading the news, you know, seeing the news, or really hooked into the Observer or online, like, you wouldn't know. I think I was still probably calling, like, Journal Line at this point, who just ripped from the Observer, and I don't remember them, you know, kind of pulling the curtain back either.
Well, now, so Vince called them thugs, so that does rule out Harlem Heat.
That's right. Yes, we're not, you know, they are
right
not
away.
Thugs. Yes,
they are ruled out. But so now Jerry is really goading Triple H during this whole phone call.
Sean, you mean?
God, Sean. I wrote HBK. I'm just going to write out Shawn Michaels.
Yeah,
you just
have because
I see the H, and I'm like, oh, Triple H. But yeah, so King really goes into him at the end. He basically says, oh, well, I know you're a wussy, so you won't be showing up at the pay-per-view. And, Sean says, well, you know, I'm stubborn, so I will still be in your house. So he's still going to make an appearance at least at, in your house. They're kind of ambiguous whether he's going to wrestle or not.
They right. And I wonder if they didn't really know. Like, they might not have known the extent yet either during this point. Like, I don't know if they had decided whether or not he would wrestle. He says he has serious face and head injuries. He was beaten and slammed into a car. So I'm curious if they were wait and see, and that's why they kind of were ambiguous about it. Because they announced that Undertaker wasn't going to wrestle. So you'd think they would have made it clear if he wasn't going to. But this is two big blows to them now on the show. Like, they're losing Undertaker and probably Shawn Michaels in big matches off the card. So they're kind of definitely into scramble mode for Sunday in Winnipeg. But I think, too, this was like a – this was kind of a case of where the tape show hurts them, right? Because they can't act on the fly and fix things now. Like, these two things broke for them. You know, in like, Undertaker was hurt, I guess, during the taping, but not enough to where they could probably diagnose and know that he'd be out for the pay-per-view because it was a month out. So here we are. All of a sudden, they have two of their top stars going to miss action, and they can't really shoot an angle on TV to, like, you know, they're just going to work through – voice and do what they can, which I mean, I think they do okay for what they got, but you know, in today's environment, they could just fix that, you know, easily on air live.
Yeah, it's interesting to think if, like, if this attack or whatever wouldn't have happened, fight, whatever you call it, what they would have done during this squash, where they'd have had like an insert promo from Sean or something to hype it, because
right,
otherwise, it just looks like, you know, basic enhancement. And I feel like with Douglas by this point, we were kind of beyond that. I mean, we'd been introduced to the character. He'd already had the feature match with Razor. So, I don't know. It just seems weird if they'd just had Douglas beat this jobber. And
yeah, but that was still the style. I think they were still kind of, they were still stuck in the older. Cause if you watch stuff again from like syndicated in 92 and I like guys would just have squash mat. Oh, you know, he's ready for Sunday. You know what I mean? Like that would be it.
So I guess that's a Watts narrative too. But
they haven't really broken from that yet. Like, I think they're about to get pushed there soon, you know, but I think they're still this in that old TV mentality. Like, I don't think Vince has seen the true threat where he has to change what he's doing. So I think he's still thinking like, okay, well, we'll put Douglas out there. We'll do it through commentary. Maybe Sean's going to call in anyway, you know?
Yeah. Well, that's one thing they could have done. They could have said, you know, like Sean's resting up from the attack last week.
Right. Douglas, exactly.
And yeah, had him call in and just have some words, but yeah, that's interesting. But yeah. And on the squash match, you ended up giving it a dud, correct?
Yeah. I gave this one a dud. The other thing that was interesting to me, too, is that Lawler is really, like, shitting on Sean in this whole thing. Like, talking about how he was provoking the guys. To me, that was weird because, like, this is obviously an open investigation. There's two sides to the story, and you have a guy out there on TV for your own company questioning your own guys, you know, actions in the fight. Like, basically saying, oh, yeah, you baited them, you're an asshole. Like, that surprised me that they were – I get that they get in front of it so they can tell the story how they want. But I was surprised that they risked having Lawler go full heel on this and put that out there.
Yeah, it was very – he went in, definitely. He didn't pull much punches in his description here. So that was interesting considering there could be some pending litigation for sure at going on. After that match, we get the merch center with Doc Hendricks.
Mm-hmm.
He says, if you want a passing grade at being cool, you can get the two dudes with attitude shirts.
So when are these guys ever going to come to your house?
This is a shirt with both Sean and Diesel, full body plastered on the shirt with a little lettering at the bottom that says two dudes with attitude. Another hideous shirt, even by 1995 standards. The merge game around this time was not good. They had that kind of yellow Razor Ramon shirt, and then after that, they were struggling because I can't think of any other kind of iconic T-shirts that were happening, and this certainly was not one of them.
Yeah, no, they're gross. I can't imagine. I can't imagine buying those shirts. And yeah, it's just it's just a real weird time frame with this merchandise. Like, yeah, that is gross. Like, I don't know who, and they're trying to butter the sweeten the deal with the free VHS.
Right.
It's unlabeled. Yeah, I don't know who's buying these things. I mean, they're trying hard with all the merch. They're getting there. But as far as promotion, but the actual merchandise itself is not viable.
As they set up the cage, we get promos from both Goldust and Paul Bearer. Not much of note here. Basically, Paul Bearer just says The Undertaker is going to return. Otherwise, nothing much doing with those two promos. Pretty generic.
Yeah, no, I agree. Nothing going on here. Just the typical Goldust stuff, and then Paul Bearer just talks about what's going on.
All right, and then we have our big main event, which was a kind of the feature match of this entire taping, was given a good bit of time. And it's Isaac Yankem versus Bret Hart in a cage match. The Shark Cage is out for the King, and if he tries to weasel his way into the match. So I do not like WWF Escape the Rule cage matches. Always have a kind of lapse in psychology from it, because with this feud, even with the dental puns and everything else, as we saw with the Pull Apart Brawl a couple weeks ago, it is kind of a heated feud. So when you do have a cage match like this and Bret only gives like one or two punches and then tries to run out and climb the cage and stuff like that, it's just one of those kind of weird pet peeves of mine that I can't get past in a lot of these matches.
Mm-hmm.
So this match started out with a lot of that, a lot of climbing and a lot of cutoffs. And that was just kind of a chore for me to get through. Then the match heats up a little bit where Bret goes for the door and the lock doesn't work. So now we know, like with Lawler's lock and key comments, he'd switched the locks. Lawler's laughing maniacally as we figure that out. And then we went to break right as that happened. We come back from break. We have a scroll at the bottom that says there's an update on Shawn Michaels on the hotline. So, you know, an expensive night if you wanted to get the scoop on Shawn between the WWF and WCW hotline, both having stories on it. I'm sure probably the Observer hotline did too.
And Journaline, so, but that's free.
Definitely. So an expensive night of mommy's pocketbook if you were asking for their permission.
Asking to, daddy for that change. Here.
Yes, definitely. So then we get some more back and forth. Bret throws Yankem off the cage. We get our only what a maneuver from Vince tonight. We get a clothesline from the top for Bret. He tries to escape, but Lawler climbs up to stop him. Then we get the cavalcade of kind of cronies that shove Lawler into the cage. We have Rene Dupree. No, I said that before.
I think all three times you said Dupree.
What is going on? Rene Goulet.
So Dupree would have been, what, probably 14 here or whatever?
I need to look. Yeah, let me look up what Rene Dupree.
Because I think he was like 19 Dupree. When he debuted in like
03. Yeah, he was really young. But no, we get Rene Goulet.
It's Pat Patterson's young boy.
Yeah, he was born in 1983.
Okay.
So he'd have been, 11 years old. Yeah,
so not
had
him.
His 12th birthday. So it was not him that threw Lawler in the cage. It was Rene Goulet. Gorilla was out there, Dave Hebner. So they throw Lawler into the cage. This is entertaining as Lawler's losing his shit. At one point, he, I guess, picks a, you know, you did some rap on that. So he actually gags his nose that he can kind of open up on command.
Yeah, he talked about that in an interview. It might have been on one of the old like Raw DVDs, I think, where they like showed this match, like the best of Raw or something like that. And they do like an interview with him, and he said he had a scab on the inside of his nose, and he could just kind of pick it and make it bleed on command. So that's what he does here, as he gets as he's up in the air and he's supposed to be afraid of heights, he picks it so his nose starts bleeding, and it's a real cool visual.
Yeah, that is cool. Like, as you can see, the shark cage rising up, he starts bleeding from his nose. It looked good. You couldn't even see when he, like, picked at it. So that worked out good. Bret's running through his offense, hits the backbreaker before he tries to escape again. As we come back for our last segment of the night, Yankem catches him and brings him back in. He's getting instructions from Lawler, who's yelling at the shark cage. Then Yankem gets the DDT. He starts to grab, to climb the cage out, but Bret grabs him, crutches him on the top rope. Bret hits a bulldog and elbow and ends up escaping the cage to win. So overall, again, it's WWF Escape the Rules. Not my favorite stipulation. This has not been my favorite feud by any stretch of the imagination. So we do get a climax here, but really besides Lawler's antics, I didn't think much juice was kind of flowing in this match. So I ended up going 2 stars, and I'm just ready for Bret to move on to something else.
No, me too. I went 2.5. I really like the King's antics in it. I thought it was, like, baseline fine. Like, I think it's on par pretty much with SummerSlam, which is also kind of heatless at times. And Lawler plays a good role in that one. My favorite spot of the match is Brett rolls up Yankum and then just smacks him with a hard punch to the jaw, and the crowd actually oohed. Like, that was the best spot of the match. But I liked all the lock and key stuff. I like, you know, King is just doing whatever he can to try and fuck over Brett. But, you know, the match itself was very... It was that they tried with Lawler, but it was very obvious where things were headed. There wasn't much drama to it. It reminded me a lot of Sean and Sid from that first Raw we watched when we started this show. Like, it's a big match in theory for Raw, but it's also very obvious where things were headed, and there wasn't much drama mixed in. It felt very much like that, where maybe it's technically fine, but is this, like, who cares by this point? And we're seeing again the downfalls of having these taped shows, and the way they're progressing through is, like, you know, Arn and Flair started their feud pretty much right when we began the show as well, and we've already seen them interact how many times in matches. And Brett and Yankum are now 8 weeks from their match at SummerSlam and finally having this rematch. It's like nobody cares by this point because they haven't really done much besides that one pull apart to add much heat to it. So it's fine if you want to have a long feud drawn out, but the way they've structured their show, we don't see these guys every week. So even if you're not wrestling every week, you should be having some interaction every week. Like, we haven't even seen Brett, really. So it's like no one's going to care by this point because the feud has cooled off so much. And you can say it's Brett getting his revenge. And they tried last week by showing that whole, pretty much the whole fucking SummerSlam match again. But, like, who wanted that? Like, we don't want to see that again.
No.
Why not just do, like, a face-to-face interview in the ring with, like, or debate with him, Yankum, and Lawler or something? You know, do something like that to keep things heated up. But by this point, it's like, yeah, no one's caring. It's like, and I guess in some ways, this is kind of Brett's pay-per-view match, right? Because he's not in your house. He's going to be doing commentary right for the main event. So this is almost like a de facto in-your-house match for Brett and Yankum, their rematch. And it, again, it's like tactically just fine, but the heat is so little. And if it wasn't for Lawler, we'd really be in trouble because he was definitely the highlight on commentary and in the cage throughout all this.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, like you said, it's just been such a long build. And a lot of weeks, the most we get is King, like, crapping on Brett on commentary.
And he's been,
like,
doing that for 3 years anyway, or whatever, 2 years anyway.
Right.
So it's not like it's new. So
yeah. So that ends that, and that ends our show. So there we go. We can now transition into our awards match of the night. I think we both are going to go with the cage match. Correct?
Yeah, despite, you know, limited choice. That's all
default.
We got,
so. I actually had the tag match ranked the same, but, I mean, you know, the cage match gets a lot of time, and it's a bigger match, certainly, so I'll go with that. Next is the segment of the night, which what did you go with on that one?
All the Lawler stuff in the cage.
Or moment, whatever we're calling it.
Yeah, I would say Lawler in the cage with the nosebleed and the freaking out getting shoved. Like, that was the best part of the whole show.
Okay, I am going, with Lawler, nosebleed. That was my favorite moment of the night. MVP?
I think Lawler. He was on commentary and in the match. He was the highlight of the show for me, which is kind of sad given the state of the company that, you know, old man Lawler on commentary is pretty much the highlight. But he was a one-man show, I thought, through a lot of this. Like, from the beginning with the jokes and pushing the match all the way through the show, carrying the through line, needling Sean in his stuff. Like, all it was pretty much the Lawler show this week.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, he was very integral both in the Sean stuff and the main event. And those were kind of the two biggest points of emphasis on the show overall. And then we had no shots fired. We did get a debut with
you always
Ahmed.
Skipped the quote, by the way.
Oh, did we have some good commentary? What did you?
I just
have
had one.
That?
It was Lawler saying it's going to be adventures and dentures, which made me laugh. So
there we go. So a great another dental pun by.
It was the best of the bunch
by King there. And then so as we said, we had Ahmed as the debut, no dropped angles, and then let's get into our final grade.
You know, it's funny. I was going to say Mercy as a dropped angle, but it looks like we actually called that out last week, so because he's pretty, his main event push is like he's done now, he's gone together. All right, so my overall grade is the lowest I've given so far to date, by a decent margin. That's 4 out of 10 for this episode of Raw. The previous low was 5 out of 10 for our first Raw, and nothing. And then we had a Nitro in there. It was 5 out of 10, but this is by far the worst thing we've watched so far this episode of Raw.
Yeah, I'm just looking now. I did give that one Nitro a 4 out of 10 that I did not like. But my Royal, I think, also is as if 5 out of 10 as well. So, yeah, I mean, I thought the Royals we've watched so far have been pretty baseline. But I did not like this one much at all. And it didn't have the great angle that saved kind of last week's show. So I ended up going 3 out of 10, even lower than you. It just... I don't know. I mean, it felt like the fourth taping of a big taping schedule, and you know they had this big feature main event that they kind of wanted to main event the whole taping with, but I wasn't too enthused with that match either. So a pretty poor effort, 3 out of 10 for me.
All right, we do have some quick feedback. We'll get to Chad, and then we'll do our combo awards.
Okay,
because the feedback is pretty much all on Raw. Actually, some on Nitro, but let's get this out of the way. So Steve McCullough says, according to Bill Watts, the show he laid out for last week actually had the six-man as the main event, with the show closing the scene, being the carnage of the heel standing dominant and the babyface is destroyed. However, Vince McMahon rearranged the order of the show in post-production so that the six-man went on first. Watts was not happy, and he quit on the 13th since he figured Vince would never really relinquish control, and there was no point in him even being there. So... we referenced that early in the Nitro section that the official that had left the WWF was Bill Watts. It is indeed. So he was there for this whole week of taping, or for this whole night of taping, and then he quit a couple days back, I should say, time-wise, after realizing that Vince was never really going to give him full control. And from what I remember, I think Watts was really just brought in to run the TV, I think. And Vince had said, like, I think I remember this from the Titan Sinking series, that, like, Vince was like, okay, it's all you. You know, I'm not going to be involved. And then quickly, as usually, as Vince does, gets involved. And I think, as we'll see, like, we got a little blip from Watts. Like, you know, he's pretty much just 1 month and done. His stuff is better than not. You know, more better than it wasn't. But as we'll see, Chad, I really think we're starting to hit the worst month in modern WWF history, at least until maybe like 2010. So from like 84, when they really kind of get going, until here, like I think this In Your House 4 through Survivor Series, or this week of TV through the go home for Survivor Series, is like some of the worst, like just like blah outing that they have, when it's just the stakes seem low, everything seems stale, old, boring. Like I think when people think of 95, they think of some of the cheesy gimmicks, and then I think they really kind of think of this stretch without realizing it's just this stretch.
Right. Yeah, I mean, so Watts, he really only lasted one TV tape.
Right, that's it, yeah.
I mean, that's crazy to think about. I mean, like, how many days, I wonder how many days he worked in, like, Stanford.
Right,
or if
right.
he, like, just showed up, like, this day at the
Well, no, he probably was in the office, I'm guessing, for that
Yeah,
month.
That's what I'm yeah. saying. Like, I'd like to know, like, how much he was actually in the office, because it'd be humorous if he, you know, with our timeline, it's like, oh, he was employed for about a month. But really, if he was not in the office, two nights. Introduces himself at the pay-per-view, does the TV the next night. And then
I mean, he might have done some house stuff. I don't remember. But I vaguely remember from the book that he was – I thought he was just brought in for TV.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't know if they did any other secondary tapings or
– Right. I guess he could have done, like, Superstars taping or something.
A real quick run, which – Watts and Vince seems like a combustible relationship. So
there was a Superstars taping on, So 9/26, was that the night after?
I think that was a couple days after.
Right, a couple days after. So they taped 1, 2, 3, 4 weeks of Superstars that night, all from Valparaiso. So he could have been there for that, maybe.
Yeah, 9/26 would have been the Tuesday after the pay-per-view.
Okay, so he might have been there for that Superstars taping. Yeah, and then Action Zone, I don't know if that was taped around the same time or not.
But. Yeah, probably same. Almost all together, maybe. They may have just crammed it all in. But, yeah, so.
Nothing wrong with cramming it all in.
Thank you, Steve, for the feedback.
Yeah, and we got more. And then I'm going to try and find out that Action Zone taping. All right,
boy.
So. Here's a few more points. And then Will Olson says, is McMahon that much of an egomaniac? He couldn't even work with a guy on TV. And I would say yes.
Yes, definitely. There's somebody that spends $500 million for a secondary
football league.
Definitely has an ego. Okay.
Justin Pratt says, Diesel Mercy match is the one where Mercy actually got hurt. It's a powerbomb. He was injured in a powerbomb. If I remember, it was a powerbomb on the floor. So I think that was what kind of put Spivey over the top as far as the back injury and finished him off.
Okay. Yeah, that checks out.
Our buddy Tim Somka, the Somcats, an interesting show. I really did wonder if anyone bought Halloween Havoc for the monster truck. Good Nitro, though, even with Duggan out there, ends on a classic Nitro staple of a long interview and, of course, everything Pepe.
Yeah, as we talked about before, I mean, the stuff with the monster truck, that just feels like a Bischoff initiative with, you know, bikers for Hog Wild or basketball player, you know, any type of special attractions. He really tried to work with that and get any type of angle just to get any eyes on the product with WCW. I mean, I don't think there was a huge, you know, like, diehard Bigfoot fans said they had to check out Halloween Havoc, but I wonder how much the monster trucks cost, or if they used like existing monster trucks and just did a paint job. Probably.
Knowing them, they probably bought new ones.
Yeah, I was going to say, please don't tell me they bought two freaking monster trucks, but they probably did. So I would say, like, if it was just a paint job that they did on existing monster trucks that they rented or whatever, they probably got, you know, a smattering of people to buy the pay-per-view to offset that cost. But yeah, if they bought two monster trucks, another money loser for WCW, I would assume.
So it looks like they just, at this point for Action Zone, they'd record like a match or two during the Raw tapings. So I know Action Zone is only an hour show, so I wonder if by this point they were just showing a lot of clips and stuff. Probably from like Superstars and whatnot, and then like one feature match. That's what my guess is. So So mainly it's the Superstars taping on that Tuesday, and then that's it. So Watts, I'm guessing Watts probably worked that one as well.
Yeah. So there we go. He did two TV tapings.
And then they were at MSG. No, he would have been gone. They were at MSG October 6th. So maybe something like that. He's there too. Who knows? Okay. All right, so then Jay Hinchy says, don't remember much from this week other than Brett finishing the feud with Isaac Yankum. Puts to bed his nearly two-year feud with the King. Nitro had the debuts of Benoit and Eddie, which was on the Benoit DVD. So, yes, that's all the case. And then we got one other piece of feedback. I just got to switch over. During the times that we recorded, we deleted the feedback.
This is actually new content. So.
Yeah, Jay and, there was a couple of new ones in there. But I think we got one other one. From our buddy Dave Kravitz said, you mentioned on the Monday Night Wars podcast, you can't remember a time where all the faces got beat up at the same time. It happened in King of the Ring 95. Savio, Razor, and the Kid all got beat up by Men on a Mission during the coronation. So yes, that's a good one.
There we go.
That we hadn't thought of, but both from that year. So we haven't really thought of any other ones, but those are two examples.
Big 95 initiative to beat up all the faces.
Think your faces look like shit. So
yeah, there we go. So now we got to do our combo awards, right?
Yeah, let's do that, and then we can hopefully wrap up and not have
wrap
to do
it
this
up.
Again.
Either way, you'll hear this, and we were successful, or this is the end of the Wrestling Warzone podcast. I'm announcing that right now.
What are the
So, show of the night, we're both going Nitro.
Yeah.
Match of the night, we're both going Eddie versus Benoit.
Yeah.
Now, what was the moment of the night?
I had Sting arriving for the tag. That was my favorite moment. When the crowd goes nuts, he comes out. It's like the payoff to the build to all that. Will he finally accept Flair's offer, and we get it here. So that was my choice.
Yeah, I conceded that was fine for the combo. MVP of the night, what was our choices there?
I went with Flair. It was the Lawler show versus the Flair show, and I thought Flair was better. So
okay. Well, Flair's better wrestler than Lawler, right?
Of course. Better commentary, by the way. I had Nitro this week.
We just run good old Will's road trip. There we go. Yeah, commentary, I mean, Lawler we said was good, but I mean, this was probably, I'd say, the most disengaged Vince has been. I don't know if he was dealing, you know, the real life of dealing with the Sean fiasco was kind of getting to him, or he just didn't have a lot of material to work with, but not, I mean, he wasn't actively bad, but didn't really give much either. And on Nitro, you had Eric actually seemingly wanting to care and giving some pretty good insight on the Benoit Eddie stuff. And then Bobby and Mongo both had their moments. So
you have to wonder, too, if Vince is starting to realize, like, as he's watching this stuff, like, when does it click for him that, like, the shit circle in the drain? You know, like, is he watching this Raw commentating and be like, oh, God, like, we need some changes. But, I mean, I don't know yet because... you know, like, again, I don't think we break out of it just yet, but I'm curious when it starts to click for him that they got to change stuff up.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting to see when he makes that switch. So what else do we have? Sorry.
The ratings winner was Raw for the night.
Yeah, that's right. Raw got a 2.5, so even this like lame duck kind of bad show ended up winning the night. So we had everything but the ratings winner, which we don't decide, going Nitro's way.
And that might have spoken to the effectiveness of that beatdown from the week before, you know, kind of coming off that hot.
Right.
One thing I thought was interesting, Chad, we always kind of talk about Nitro having the better, like, roster and in-ring action. This is actually the first time Nitro has won best match for us. So, it's interesting to me.
Yeah, I mean, I think Raw's been pretty good so far at having a...
anchor match.
Because, what, Sid versus Michaels won the first week? Now, that was a pretty weak winner.
Right.
So there must have been really nothing on Nitro that week.
I think it was Hogan Luger, right? That was like,
yeah, I think that was that week. So yeah, they were kind of lucky with that one. But otherwise, I mean, they've had a, you know, at least 2.5 to sometimes 3 to 3.25 type match that has kind of held things through, which, it's either been like their good feature match and jobber stuff on Raw, and then
Nitro's more balanced.
Nitro's just been more consistent. I mean, Nitro's had a smattering of decent to good short matches, but this was the first, I would say, like, really good match we've seen on Nitro. Yeah, even, I mean, I think that Eddie Benoit match is better than, like, Liger versus Pillman from the first Nitro.
Right, yeah, no, I could see that, which I'm fine never watching the first Nitro again. I'm glad we skipped it. well, if you put it like in fantasy terms, too, Raw's kind of been stars and scrubs, right? Like the one big match, the bunch of nonsense.
Yes.
Whereas Nitro's kind of been the balanced roster, right? With the kind of just everyone's pretty good. So we'll see. We'll see how that changes as we get more and more talent coming into Nitro and as Raw continues to kind of hit their funk. So, all right. So there you go. hopefully you're hearing this. Really quick, at PlayStation.com, a new piece went out today. Stacey O'Loughlin. O'Loughlin? I should probably ask her exactly since we talk all the time now. Her Divas Deep Dive introduction. So she's going to she basically watched like every televised Divas match from 2000 till the Women's Revolution and is going to be sharing insights. Like, she's not reviewing them. She's kind of just giving insights and thoughts and showing us things that we should look at and ways to think about that wrestling during that time period that she grew up with. She grew up with in the 2000s. And how she viewed and how she related to the women of the WWE at that time. So I think it's going to be an interesting series. She gives her intro, which is worth reading because it gives an insight to her thought process. She's got a nice, easy conversational way of writing. So I recommend reading that. Also, a new episode of Talk and Pop, Jenny and Tim on the Pop feed interviewed Steve Willey, and had a lot of interesting topics on discussion there as usual for that show. So be sure to peep that.
I haven't caught that one yet, but it's on the docket.
That was when I was cutting the grass.
There was a lot of Willie this weekend.
I was cutting the grass yesterday. The real feel was 103, and I was out there cutting the grass listening to Talking Pop. So,
quick side note, since you and Brad shit on how slow my grass grows, I've had to cut it more frequently, so thank you for that. Brad, like, basically challenging my manhood that I only had to cut the grass every 2 weeks.
Well, now you can step up to where the big boys play, cutting the grass every week.
Thank you.
New Hard Traveling Fanboys as well was out on the Pop feed. Our PTV and Group Watch Champion Series kicked off. We have a group of staff members that watch shows every week and are working on various projects, and one of them was Great American Bash 92. We chose with the passing of Vader, one of his most famous matches. And it's not a review, but it's all different thoughts on different categories, some like 10 of us. So it's an interesting read and a fun group project. So be sure to check that out, as well as the brand new Mission Indie Possible live watch party and the premiere episode of No Holds Barred, the podcast, me and Aaron George. That's on the PlayStation Nation wrestling feed. So that was a lot of fun. Did you get to check that out?
Yeah. Two quick things. One thing on the Mission Indie Possible, I'd recommend that because they watched three different matches, and these are about three of the most different matches you can think about. Mm-hmm. Like, they watch a Joshi match from this year. It's a Mid-South match with Bill Watts, and Cornette has to wear a diaper if they lose, from 1984. And then a Vader versus Kiyoshi Tamura shoot-style match from 1994, which is real quick. I recommended that one for them. But that was really cool. Like, I did that on Saturday morning. I listened to the podcast and watched those matches together. I personally had, like, all matches ranked in the 3.75 to 4 stars range. as you'll hear with the commentary, Jordan or Steve did not like one of those matches nearly that much. But it was interesting, and I mean, three totally different matches that are well worth watching to see kind of where you land.
Yeah.
Now going to you and Aaron's new love story or whatever. that was also an interesting listen. Probably my favorite thing on that episode, beside the another burial of Brad and you getting into comics and Brad having nothing to do with that, even though he's been talking about comics for a year.
But I don't read his shit, so...
Right, so know. Who cares? Also, your terrible TV choices, but I digress, was just the kind of where we're at as a fan right now, because I thought that was a good, like, nuanced discussion that y'all had there. And some perspective, because, you know, as we kind of run a website, help work on it, it does feel kind of like we have to keep up, because we have to keep up, you know, it's a quote-unquote job, and I'm using that in quotation marks, but it is kind of that, where it's like, you know, Aaron at one point says, you know, if I didn't talk to a bunch of the guys on the chats and stuff, there's no way I'd watch these pay-per-views, you know, that happen. And I'm in the same boat. Like, I don't have anybody that comes to my house or anybody I know, like in my hometown, that watches wrestling or that keeps up with it. So definitely, if I didn't have the community, I mean, I wouldn't be watching a lot of this stuff. So it was an interesting discussion.
There you go. So we'll be back eventually with that. Subscribe to all of our feeds: PlayStation Wrestling, PlayStation Pop, and Pro Wrestling Only. Those are all on iTunes. Follow us on Twitter, @PlaceNumber2BNation, Facebook.com/PlaceNumber2BNation, and of course our page chat, Facebook.com/PTBNWrestlingWarzone. We have, you know, posts there throughout the week. You can share your feedback. We're hoping you guys share some feedback for In Your House 4 as well. So we're looking forward to that.
Very infamous pay-per-view, so hopefully we'll get some feedback on
And the build's been good, like we've said, Chad, but we'll see how the if things fall apart from there.
Yeah, build has been good. Let's see if they are able to ride the moment.
Time will tell. So hopefully you're hearing this. Hopefully we haven't killed ourselves because it gets lost again. And hopefully we'll be back again with our next episode, looking at episode number 9 of the In Your House 4. So for Chad, I'm JT. We're out. Smell that napalm. We'll be back. I'm moving out.